Well, thanks a lot, Lee, for organizing this symposium. I really enjoyed Mike and Mark's presentations so far. Great to have the opportunity to be here. Let's see. We've heard some talks now on cowpea and bean, and I'm going to stay in the legume theme, of course, and talk a little bit about our work on pea and chickpea with respect to biofortification. My co-author is Bunyamin Turan. He's the chickpea breeder in our group. I'm mainly working on pea breeding. We work in a team that we have. Bert Vandenberg is breeding lentil and faba bean, and Kirsten Bett is breeding common beans. So we work together. We have pathologist Sabina Benitza in our group. We have about 20 to 30 technical staff. So we try to get economies of scale by working together on these crops in Western Canada. So we already know all these things about health benefits of pulses. So many nice traits that we just heard described in the first talks on many of these macro ingredients of protein, starch, fiber, gut health, low glycemic index, and so on. Well, can we make further improvements? I already feel like pulses are superfoods, but can we even do more from a nutritional side? A little segue on the theme of gluten, and these are a few stats that I picked up from Bueller group in Switzerland. Bueller is one of the top makers of flour milling equipment in the world, and they've now become interested in pulses. Well, maybe this is one reason. You know, there's one or 2% of people in the U.S. perhaps, or in North America, have celiac disease. Maybe 2% are allergic to wheat. 5% might experience irritable bowel syndrome. So maybe that's 9% of the population. But what they've detected is that in the last year or so, in the range of 40% of people are avoiding or reducing their wheat consumption. So I think that alone is a natural opportunity for this community and International Year of Pulses to promote pulses. In 2012, the British Journal of Nutrition published a complete separate issue on nutritional value, health benefits of pulses related to obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. So I think the profile of pulses is gradually increasing, and I think in 2016 we'll certainly see that trend continuing. We were a little bit inspired by this project Harvest Plus, and we may hear a little bit more of that in some of the next presentations. It's arising out of the CG Center's system, basically trying to address the thing called hidden hunger, people who are lacking in some micronutrients in their diets. I think if you ate all the foods that are displayed on this picture, you wouldn't be struggling with hidden hunger. But as we know, many people in the world are lacking in some of the micronutrients. And through this Harvest Plus concept came the theory of biofortification. Can we breed crops to be more nutrient dense? And the targets seem to be iron, zinc, vitamin A, as being some of the key targets of that. So a little bit about pea, the crop that I work on the most. Pea works well in Western Canada in our dryland agriculture system as a rotation crop with wheat and canola. So over the last decade or so, Canada's become the leading producer of pea in the world, around 4 million tons out of a total of about 11 million tons in the world. China, Russia, U.S., India are other large producers. Canada being a country with a lot of land and not that many people, we tend to be people who are a country that exports everything, be it food or be it natural resources, so no exception here. And so India and China are the two biggest destinations for Canadian peas. So when I think as a breeder, well, what are these markets looking for in terms of pea? In India, pea might be consumed a bit like this, maybe not with the chopsticks beside, but kind of as a dal together with rice or wheat. In China, it seems the system's a little bit different. It's more of an industrial crop there. China's been buying yellow peas from Canada in the last decade or so, extracting a high-quality starch and making vermicelli noodles. So a special kind of noodle, and in the past they were using mung bean, but found that yellow pea is cheaper and also makes very good noodles. In the last few years, the top factories are kind of morphing their emphasis more to the byproduct of this starch extraction, and that is the high-value protein. And they're drying it carefully, keeping it in good condition, and selling it back to North Americans in cans like this of protein powder that cost $50 each or something. So it's an interesting development. So these protein fractions are one of the emerging markets for pea and other pulses, where you have fractions from wet milling, as is the case in China, or from various kind of dry milling techniques. We just heard Mike tell about food uses of pulses. Some large food companies are starting to incorporate pulse flours in various products, like those nice chips. Pet food is another actually high-value market for pulse ingredients. And there's an interesting project going on in China among food researchers there to use pulses like pea flour to incorporate together with wheat in many staple food-type products like noodles and steamed breads and biscuits. From our point of view in breeding of this crop, here's sort of my short list of things that I like to try to achieve as a plant breeder working on pea: increasing yield, using markers, and we hear a lot of talk about markers and genomics in a meeting like this, sequencing DNA, tolerance to heat, but one of them here is this aspect of biofortification. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that we've been doing in that theme of biofortification in the last few years. So we started by looking at what are some of the concentrations of various micronutrients in four different pulse crops: bean, chickpea, field pea, and lentil. And if we maybe just look at iron, for example, we have the first two columns are RDA, recommended daily amounts for males and females in milligrams. Basically, what you can see for iron and for almost all the other nutrients on this list, pulses do quite well, both for males and females, in terms of delivering a pretty good amount of the RDA in a 100-gram serving. Not so great for calcium, but you can drink milk. But there's this thing of phytic acid, and we focused on this a little bit in the last few years as an interesting compound that can perhaps reduce the absorption or uptake, bioavailability of various nutrients. So phytic acid is the main storage form of phosphorus in seeds of peas, but in seeds of almost every crop and weed species. But it's got a lot of negative charges on the molecule, and those attract positively charged ions like iron and zinc. They stick on there and they pass through the guts of humans and monogastrics. So two problems: we lose the nutrients, and second, we pollute the environment with these things. So we certainly weren't the first to think of this concept, but we tried to develop low phytate pea. Working with Victor Raboy at Idaho, Victor has been instrumental in developing low phytate soybean, corn, together with my colleague Brian Rossnagel, developed low phytate barley. So we thought, well, what about low phytate pea? So we identified these two lines derived by a mutagenesis program out of a cultivar called CDC Bronco, which is a fairly widely grown cultivar in Western Canada. And then we looked at a bunch of things about those low phytate lines. How did they do in the field, and how did they do nutritionally? So in the field, they were all right, not great. You can see the bit of a yield penalty with those lines. But remember, those were like the raw mutants. So they're probably carrying a bunch of other smaller mutations or different mutations in there. So the yield was reduced a bit. The seed size was a bit smaller. The total phosphorus in the seeds was about the same as the progenitor variety. But the big difference you can see in terms of phytate concentration, much less. And conversely, inorganic phosphorus concentration, much more. And inorganic phosphorus is the form that is digestible. We studied those two mutants, made crosses with Bronco, their progenitor, and with CDC Meadow, another cultivar that's grown in Western Canada, and basically we found that they inherited as a single recessive gene. And the two, that trait was allelic in the two mutants, so simply inherited. Graduate student Arun Shunmugam looked at how did phytate and inorganic phosphorus accumulate in developing seeds of pea. In the top graph, you can see in the black bars, this is CDC Broncos. So if you go from 14, 21, 28, 49 days after flowering, you see the accumulation of phytate. Phytate also accumulated in the low phytate lines, but just to a much lesser extent. And conversely, with the inorganic phosphorus, again, accumulation in the low phytate lines kind of stayed on the low side with CDC Bronco, the progenitor variety. Then we want to look at availability. It's one thing to have iron in the seeds, but is it available to humans? So we collaborated with Ray Glan at Cornell, and Ray's group developed this assay called based on these cells called KCO2. KCO2 are human intestinal cells. They're in this petri dish well system. There's a membrane on top of it, and then you put your food product on the top that's been digested with pepsin and pancreatic bile. It's incubated for a period of time, and then the cells are harvested. And what you're looking at is the amount of ferritin in those cells as a measure of iron uptake. And I think we're going to hear more about this later this morning. Looking forward to Elad Tako's presentation. So what we found was when we looked at these low phytate lines, draw your attention to these bars here. So the first two bars in each cluster, I got four clusters of bars here, and these were field locations where the low phytate lines were grown compared to the three normal phytate varieties. And what you see at each of the four locations, you see that the first two bars are taller than the next three bars. And that means that this is a measure of iron bioavailability, nanograms of ferritin per milligram of protein. The extent of the difference differed in the four locations, but in each location we had greater iron bioavailability from the low phytate lines compared to the normal. Arun did a QTL mapping study with the low phytate lines. This is a population developed between a cross from low phytate by normal phytate pea, and as we hypothesized, low phytate and iron bioavailability essentially mapped to the same place on pea linkage group 5. And when we look at some of the lines arising from that population, this cluster are the low phytate lines, so they're lower in phytate but higher in iron bioavailability, and this cluster was normal in phytate and lower in iron bioavailability. Switching a little bit from the phytate theme, Ashok Kumar is a postdoc that worked with us. He did a kind of a survey of looking at carotenoids in peas and chickpeas. In this initial study, he had a limited set, about a dozen pea and a dozen chickpea varieties. We looked at the carotenoid profile. So in pea and chickpea, we could detect violxanthin, lutein, zeaxanthin, beta-carotene. We didn't really see any measurable beta-carotene in yellow pea, a little bit in green pea and desi chickpea. I just point out the top of this axis is sitting around 16 here for yellow pea, 30 for green pea, and 10 for desi chickpea. So interestingly, the green pea cultivars tended to have a greater amount of total carotenoids than the yellow or the desi. When he looked at a broader diversity of pea and chickpea material, here was around 100 pea lines, about 150 chickpea varieties, diverse accessions, genetically diverse. He saw more or less a similar, somewhat normal distribution in total carotenoid concentration. And so I suppose we'd like to look at material here that have higher. A current student working in our group, Parminder, is looking at pea lines derived from, in this case, this cross 4802 and this cross 4803. Both of these two crosses are between a low phytate line and a normal phytate green pea cultivar. I didn't mention that the low phytate is in a yellow cotyledon background. So these materials are segregating for yellow and green cotyledon. And we were our hypothesis is that perhaps combining low phytate with higher carotenoid may lead to greater iron bioavailability than either one alone. And so we're not quite far enough along to make any strong statements about that. But interestingly, in terms of correlation, here's ferritin, so let's call this iron bioavailability. So it was negatively correlated with phytate concentration, as we expected. So the ones that had less phytate had more iron bioavailability. But in this cross, the ones that had more lutein also had more iron bioavailability. So perhaps there's some synergy between the carotenoid concentration and low phytate in terms of delivering more ferritin. And by the way, this is data from the CACO2 study. Whoops. In the second population, we again saw the correlation with phytic acid, but not with any of the carotenoids. In a third population she was working with, this is a real population between two yellow pea varieties that are both normal phytate. So we don't have the phytate segregation per se here, but the parents differed somewhat or reasonably in iron concentration of the dry seeds. And so here we saw positive correlation between the iron concentration of the seeds with the iron bioavailability in the CACO2 cells, which perhaps was expected but not necessarily expected. Looking at some of the sublines, you could say, out of the 4802, and the next slide will be the 4803 populations that Parminder was working with. Here's iron bioavailability compared with CDC Bronco being at level 1. You see that some of these sublines had 2 and 3 times more iron available than the cultivar, and similarly in this population. I think someone mentioned folate this morning. It's another vitamin that we are interested in looking at. I'm not a chemist, but what I'm told is a really tough one to assay, a very complex, cumbersome assay for folate. Asha Kumar, I mentioned him, the postdoc working in our group, together with Randy Purvis, who is a chemist in our city in Saskatoon, worked on this for quite a while to kind of optimize an assay. And we looked at bean, lentil, chickpea, and pea, a small set. As I said, it's a complicated assay, so 4 cultivars, 3 reps, 2 locations. What we found here is total folate. They were able to tease out 6 different individual folate molecules, and then we totaled them up. What I found, well, bean, lentil, chickpea were stronger than pea with respect to total folate in terms of this limited set of germplasm that we looked at. So I felt at first a little bit discouraged, but checking in the literature, I found some other studies that showed people that found that, well, pea was kind of similar or on par with lentil, bean, and chickpea. So I think it certainly points me in the direction that I need to do perhaps some more investigation and some more breeding. So we'd like to study wider sets of germplasm on this. Just to tell you that we're involved with genomic work, developing SNP markers, in pea, developing a map. We're now refining this map using genotyping by sequencing approaches. A study by Marwan Diapari in our group looked at an association mapping panel of pea and found several positive associations with markers and iron concentration in this case. We're part of a group that's looking at developing the genome sequence of pea. I see Claire Coyne is here. She's involved in this project as well. Overall, I come back to this picture here and think of, well, what should we look at in the future in terms of biofortifying these pulse crops? We'd like to go from the CACO assay to chicken model, maybe ultimately to human models would be better. We hear that various phenolic compounds can be either positive or negative with respect to iron bioavailability. We'd like to pursue that a little bit more and bring in the genomic work to sort of provide those kind of tools for us in breeding. So I think I'm going to stop on that. Acknowledge funding. We work a lot with farmers, actually. A good amount of our funding for breeding comes from Saskatchewan pulse growers. You also see Alberta and Manitoba pulse grower groups on our list. So that's good. We've had a really good relationship there. We also have funding from provincial and federal funding sources. So thanks.
We have time for several questions.
Mike.
Thanks for that nice talk. Back to the sort of the relationship between phytate and iron bioavailability in the lutein, the one sort of set of material that you saw caused cessation of lutein. Mm-hmm. What was the lutein to phytate relationship?
Lutein to phytate relationship.
Is there high in lutein, or are they just low in phytate?
I think we still actually need to tease that out a bit, and maybe we can figure that out on this when we look at the individual lines. So this is just correlation of kind of a large set of lines, and so that's the key question. Are the ones that have, are basically the question maybe that you're getting at is, the ones with the highest bars, are they both low phytate and high lutein? And I don't know that yet, but she's preparing her proposal or her permission to write her thesis report. So I suspect, but we need to look at that a bit more. Yeah.
Todd, you had these two mutants that were low in phytate, and I'm just wondering, was there any sort of pre-screening to let you know that you should look at these lines? Was there any reason that you screen all of your
basically what we did, we followed the approach that Victor Raboy has been using. So basically we did chemical mutagenesis, grew the progeny, and then did a grunt work selection. So we screened between 5,000 and 10,000, I think, individual plants, and found some putative low, and then we retested and found two. So the mutation, I guess, comes up fairly frequently, because 5,000 or 10,000 isn't that high of a number, but that's how we found them in the first place. Yeah. Hi, Claire.
How's your progress on getting back to a good yield?
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for that. So as you saw initially, we were about 15% lower yield than the progenitor. So we've used that low phytate trait in breeding. Now we think we're getting close to having the same yield and still having low phytate. So we now have about 5 lines that are getting close to registration trial level. I hope I can report in a couple of years that we have something that we call a cultivar with low phytate.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So in other crops, it's known that there's 2 major genes which can be mutated that result in low phytate. So MRP5, we're also mixed. You know, I was kind of surprised that you're actually bothering
Okay, good question. The PhD student who was working on that looked at MIPS, per se, and found that in these 2 low phytate lines, there was no mutation in MIPS. That was our first guess, because as you say, it's been reported in other species. So he kind of tried to do a bit of a fishing trip to find where is the mutation, and we haven't answered that question yet. But we can pretty well say it's not in that MIPS gene.
There's fairly good synteny between soybean, where there's a known 2-pump box. Probably you would be able to pull it out fairly easily at this MRP5 gene. And they're very well conserved.
Okay. Maybe I need to talk to you a bit more on
that. That sounds good. That's
okay. Okay, thank you.